the chain of command at your agency may not look like it's supposed to. Government Accountability Office says only 17 of 30 CIOs they talk to say they report to their agency's administrator. The Clinger-Cohen Act requires the CIO to report right to the top. Valerie Melvin is Director of Information Management and Human Capital Issues at GAO, and she's here to talk about the org chart problem. Valerie, it's good to have you on the program again. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
Now, when I say an org chart program, I'm not talking about the piece of paper or the website per se. I'm talking about the actual chain of command issues. What does the Clinger-Cohen Act specifically lay out, and how did that impact what you looked at here?
Well, the Clinger-Cohen Act requires agency heads to designate chief information officers. Now, this is critical because the federal government, as you know, has a very large information technology budget. It's estimated to be approximately $79 billion in fiscal year 2011 alone. What the Clinger-Cohen Act does is require CIOs to lead reforms that would help better manage the spending for information technology, control system development risks, and achieve measurable improvements in performance. In this regard, CIOs have a critical role in advising and assisting the agency heads in managing their IT investments. Having said that, what we were looking at was the extent to which, not really the extent, but the current roles and responsibilities of the CIOs and the need for any potential modifications to the Clinger-Cohen Act and related laws. And this is important because over the years that we've been looking at information technology management, we've identified and reported many times on longstanding problems with federal agencies' management of IT. And this culminates often in failed, you know, initiatives, their inability to deliver systems or ultimately to deliver systems that are going to meet agency needs. So ultimately what the Clinger-Cohen Act said is that these agencies are to have these officials there to advise and assist the heads to make sure that they are managing investments appropriately.
Now, the first of those the issues that you looked at, I think, is the one that I find the most interesting, and that's determining the current role, not even as much the responsibilities, but the role of the CIO, because if you talk to any CIO that doesn't have budget authority, they would say they want budget authority. What did you find when you looked specifically at what the CIOs are actually doing compared to what they're supposed to be doing by the word and spirit of Clinger-Cohen?
Well, there's a couple of aspects to what we looked at. In one case, when we looked at the roles, we were focusing on 13 primary areas. These are key areas related to IT management and information technology management. And across the board, we did find CIOs performing on various levels in all of these 13 areas. I think, though, with what you're referring to as far as their influence on the budget, there were critical areas where we saw them limited in their ability to really they weren't empowered to be effective in carrying out responsibilities in those areas. As you said, they were limited in terms of controlling IT funding. That meant in some cases they were not able to make the call, or they weren't positioned to make the call on when not to fund a particular investment, and ultimately whether it might meet intended or desired capabilities. We found cases where only 9 said that their approval was required for the inclusion of for IT investments. 21 others of the 30 that we looked at said their approval either was not required or was required only for certain major investments. Similarly, it went beyond just looking at control of the budget. It also pertained to their influence over the IT workforce. For example, sometimes they were not engaged in hiring even their own staff, and where there were component agencies, they did not have influence or input into the hiring of those IT staff, and ultimately they didn't have input into performance appraisals for these staff.
A couple of the elements that you found I thought just really popped out at me. You're right, many CIOs serve in positions in addition to their role as CIO, such as human capital officer. What was the impact of the ability to perform, at least in the view of the CIOs themselves, by the fact that they're having to wear a number of hats?
Well, they had multiple views regarding wearing multiple hats. You know, although, as you know, the Clinger-Cohen Act says that managing information technology, managing information should be their primary function. We did find, however, that some felt that having multiple hats was actually a benefit for them. They thought it helped them to establish a link between agency policy and operational implementation, or that it made them more aware of problems quickly. For example, if they were involved with the human capital process, they might know beforehand that a human capital system wasn't functioning as it should, or providing the benefit or capability that it should. In other instances, though, many of them didn't feel it was either negative or positive. They just, you know, they did it because it was required of them. There was one CIO who said having multiple positions did put a strain on the ability to adequately perform all required responsibilities.
One other thing that I thought was really interesting, tenure at the CIO positions remained at about 2 years. What's driving that?
It appears from what we could tell that many of the CIOs do leave after about 2 years. This is consistent with the prior study that we did back in 2004. Reasons varied. Sometimes it had to do with moving on to larger agencies where they could serve in a more significant or larger CIO role. Sometimes it had to do with retirement. There were just general reasons for staying. Sometimes they said it was also stress. Just general factors that required them or forced them or caused them to leave, I guess I should say.
And the recommendations that you gave to OMB about this?
Yes, we did make recommendations to OMB. And the reason that our recommendations were focused on OMB was because OMB established guidance, and they have put out a number of reform initiatives and that are aimed at improving the CIO's authority, or at least making sure that they carry out the authorities that they have. What we felt was lacking was that although there was guidance that was a good step, the guidance didn't establish deadlines or metrics that we thought were critical to really empowering the CIOs to carry out their responsibilities. For example, they had not established deadlines or metrics that would require agencies to demonstrate the extent to which they were exercising their authorities. And so our recommendations were aimed at having OMB issue guidance that, first of all, does define very clearly and reaffirms the roles of the CIO, and to require agency heads to establish metrics from which the CIO's responsibilities could be measured.